Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The program is called World Watchers. It emanates from KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 685, January the 21st, 1985. I want to clear up some confusion that I caused myself about receiving information of these programs, the bibliography and the sources of information. I believe that World Watchers is probably the most documented radio program in the world that there has been or ever will be, and I don't cite these documents on the air as I go through each statement. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't, with the volume or page number. But if you write to me and send a self-addressed stamped envelope and include 25 cents for the time and the copying of the bibliography, I will send you a sheet of the program that you have heard with the sources of information. I will not copy the articles myself out of my filing drawers. That's what I was doing. It was taking so much time, photocopying books and articles that people wanted. I will give you the source or reference that I got it from. Then you go to the library and copy it. So I will be supplying the documentation for these broadcasts. Now, they play at different times in different cities and go to different people across the country and overseas. So I don't know what you're hearing. You have to tell me the content, and I announce at the beginning of the broadcast, like this evening is program number 685. You tell me the number, and I'll conclude with that number, and then I'll send you the sheet if you want it that way. And if you want to wait and order those sheets once a month, four of them fit into one envelope with the 20 cents, and just put on the envelope inside, you want broadcast 681, 682, 683. Write in there what it is you want, because so many people are listening to them, as I say, at different times. The address is P.O. Box 22511-93923. I thought I better begin the broadcast with that, because once I get rolling with the information, it goes very fast, and I hope I remember to do it when we conclude the broadcast. I'll give it to you again. Well, Ronald Reagan was sworn as President of the United States and George Bush as Vice President today. He said he wants to continue to make America great again. We will continue our work to make America great again. Those are the words that come out of Robert Welch of the John Birch Society, the nurturing ground of Ronald Reagan in California with the extreme, a very extreme right-wing group that he was part of, that milieu that began his career. Making America great again means that we gave away so much to Stalin, Franklin Roosevelt did, and Churchill gave in, that now we're on the path and we're going to beat that Soviet bear, and actually the rattles are going forth for the World War III that he wants to have to make America safe for the Christians that put him into office, and that is what Ronald Reagan is about. He said, "I do solemnly swear I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Forget, so help me God." He threw that in. He has stretched the Constitution with a rubber band. It has gone out of shape because the people that put him in don't believe in the Constitution, and George Bush has stretched it, and I don't know what the requirements are there. There was nothing in the Constitution about the espionage system, the National Security Council, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the World Anti-Communist League, and all the organizations that have played around the Constitution and thought that it was too weak in being abused by liberals or commie simps. We'll see what happens in his second administration. Now, last week, I gave you the letters and the titles of two organizations. They became one. They were one. And I promised I may begin every program with those so that new listeners don't miss it and the old listeners hopefully will remember it. The British American Canadian Corporation, BACC, was formed in May of 1945. The war was over May the 8th, 1945, and within hours of that, this corporation was set up. It changed its name to the World Commerce Corporation, April the 2nd, 1947. And this was a group of hundreds of multinational international corporations set up with the conditions for political assassinations that were detailed in the Torbit document. That's available, and I have the address of where you can get that on last week's broadcast, number 684. Now, getting to the World Commerce Corporation and how it applies to what I want to talk about today, the primary concern right now in this nation is having the nomination of Mr. Edwin Meese as the Attorney General of the United States. That is the most dangerous situation that fits directly into the agents of the World Commerce Corporation, and they're beginning to fund private armies in the United States, mercenaries, and, as I say, groups like the World Anti-Communist League. But Ronald Reagan, now President of California, a second term, George Shultz, Secretary of State out of the Bechtel Corporation in California, Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of Defense, also out of Bechtel Corporation in California. On the board of Bechtel is John McCone, the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency when John Kennedy was murdered and it was covered up. On the board of ITT when the orders came to kill Salvador Allende and put in Mr. Pinochet. And now the president wants the Justice Department, the FBI, all legal services handled by Edwin Meese as Attorney General. Now, Edwin Meese is a problem that goes back to California, and again, the stretching of the Constitution and the behavior of the people around Meese and Reagan and Caspar Weinberger, those three in particular who have so much power today. And I want to talk about that as fast as I can, briefing over certain points, and I'll get back to the details on other broadcasts. Now, Robert Welch died this past week, January the 4th, almost 2 weeks ago, founder of the John Birch Society. He promised that he would get rid of the commie simps, the sympathizers, from the fabric of American society, fitting in again with the training and the programming of Ronald Reagan with Patrick Frawley and Mr. Spencer and the group in L.A. that actually molded him into the image of what they wanted. Mr. Welch came from Massachusetts. He set up his headquarters in San Marino, up northern California, near Palo Alto, near the Stanford Institute, and also down in Los Angeles, very influential in Los Angeles. He went to the University of North Carolina. He went to the U.S. Naval Academy for 2 years, two more years at Harvard Law School. He left Harvard Law School in 1921. He went into the candy business with his brother, James Welch, and that from 1930 to 1935, they made about $20 million, or rather from 1935 to 1956. He worked for the War Production Board during the war and the Price Administration Advisory Committee on candy during the war. And as I say, by the mid-1950s, he was a multimillionaire. In the 1940s, and this is where we go back to the World Commerce Corporation, when the war was just winding down or over, he went to England, where, according to the New York Times, this is January the 4th, 1985, he spent time in England in the late 1940s and was shocked at the post-war socialism there. He wasn't shocked at the Nazi atrocities. He wasn't shocked by the missiles that almost destroyed Great Britain. He wasn't shocked at the devastation of World War II and the potential for World War III. He was shocked by socialism, which really was not rampant in the 40s in England. The Cold War was developing with Joseph McCarthy, who goes right back to the people working with John Birch Society and Robert Welch. In 1942, he wrote a book called The Politician, in 1942. He started a magazine called One Man's Opinion and changed it to be known as American Opinion in 1958. He founded the John Birch Society, and he wrote a book about John Birch, who was Army intelligence, killed by the Chinese communists, who was his hero. December the 9th, 1958, in Indianapolis, he founded the John Birch Society. Now, this was a national network that, as I reread it, has to be another branch and splinter because it connects directly down to Clay Shaw and New Orleans and all national segments and international segments of the World Commerce Corporation, the World Anti-Communist League, and all these various groups. He was sponsoring broadcasts of Fulton Lewis Jr. and Clarence Mannion. Now, for many years, I missed the point about Clarence Mannion. There were always kind of jokes about his leftist leanings. He happened to be the dean of Notre Dame Law School. Out of Notre Dame came the largest hunk of FBI people, the Irish Catholic FBI. Many of them go to Notre Dame. People from the Justice Department go to Notre Dame. J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the FBI, we've done a lot of parts of his fascism, and I'll be doing more on his Interpol and Nazi connections over and over again to refresh your memory of that. But the important part is that after the Birch Society was founded in Indianapolis, it had a broad base of people from all over the country. One of the people on the National Council was Colonel Lawrence Bunker, the former personal aide to Douglas MacArthur, and another was Dr. Ravillo Oliver, professor of classical language and literature at the University of Illinois, who goes directly down to Colonial Dignidad, to Argentine, to Chile, to Otto Skorzeny and the top Nazis that work with the Nazis and Klan, whose membership was formed by people being edged on by the John Birch Society. It became that dangerous. And I think with Reagan in office and with these people taking their positions like little soldiers in a chess game, I have to go back even more. In addition to Mr. Donovan of the OSS forming World Commerce Corporation into the John Birch Society. Now, there was a conference in Japan recently described in the Washington Times, Free People Must Unite. This is Reverend Moon's paper, an address by Kagehisa Toyama, T-O-Y-A-M-A, the Washington Times, December the 17th, 1984. He had a conference in Asia for journalists, just as Reverend Moon had one for 400 news people recently over in Japan or South Korea. And this Japanese journalist said, World War III started when the Allied leaders met near the end of World War II. Stalin won over Roosevelt and silenced Winston Churchill, paving the way for world communization today. Now, he refers to having a conference in 1982, 3 years ago, and he invited Mr. Solzhenitsyn and all the Cold Warriors from the international set to Japan, and he spelled out in the Washington Times that World War III began with Roosevelt sitting with Stalin and Churchill caved in. That was from the Washington Times, December the 17th. Now, Robert Welch of the John Birch Society said that World War III began when John Birch was murdered. In a book called The John Birch Society by Brian Stevens, The John Birch Society in California Politics, it was published in 1966 by a member of the Birch Society who realized that it was as dangerous, if not more so, than communism, equal to communism, and that it was threatening the two-party system that Ronald Reagan and George Bush took an oath to protect. And he describes who is John Birch, who inspired Robert Welch of the Birch Society. He was a young Baptist missionary in China when the Japanese occupied China during World War II. He was an intelligence advisor and interpreter for the Flying Tiger of Claire Chennault until the Flying Tigers organized and became part of the United States Army Corps. When the Army took over, Birch was commissioned a captain in the Army and continued his duties as OSS intelligence chief in the Air Force. He worked with Madame Chennault. Well, as soon as the war was over and Mr. Donovan of the OSS got the World Commerce Corporation started, or before it, when it was the British Canadian American group, and then by 1947 it was officially the World Commerce. Donovan left World Commerce once it was settled, and according to the book The Last Hero, Wild Bill Donovan by Anthony Cave Brown, this book is page 801. It says, while Donovan was engaged in the business of world commerce, he still practiced law, fighting a Supreme Court case for the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company. He flew to Hong Kong, spent several weeks examining the legal problems of Claire Chennault's Chinese air transport, that's the Flying Tigers, and was running his law firm. Under his returning to the law firm from the OSS, at least under the table he set up and helped set up the OSS becoming the CIA, under Donovan, the firm made their first $1 million in net profits in 1950. Now, this book on the John Birch Society by Brian Stevens says that Welch never met Birch. He was concerned about secret files on John Birch, which are a great mystery. They were locked up by the Defense Department, and you can't see them. But people that worked with John Birch in China when he was killed said that he literally suicided himself, made a fool of himself. The members of that team all got away, and John Birch was killed because he was instigating problems in the OSS over in China. One fellow who, March 31st, 1961, who spoke about John Birch, his name is Joseph Sample, president of a radio and television company in Billings, Montana, served in the OSS with John Birch. He wrote in his column of the Weekly Yellowstone News that John Birch was no hero and he didn't die in glory. Another person, Gustav Krauss, Los Angeles manufacturer, former OSS officer, prepared the mission on which Birch was killed. He reluctantly said that Birch was responsible for his own death. He tried to force his way out of a situation instead of being diplomatic. Now, when Mr. Welch wrote about John Birch, he said that the death of John Birch was the guns for World War III. So we have the placement of World War III in, I've seen it in phrases in books by Mr. Donovan. We get this in Japan conferences in December 84 about World War III, and the intent of World War III was placed with the death, the first casualty, being this John Birch. Now, at this time, Caspar Weinberger, as Secretary of Defense, was state chairman of the Republican Party in California, and he is the man that wants to lead you into World War III. Ronald Reagan, the President of the United States, is pushing the arms and weapons towards World War III, and this is why Meese is so important, because in order to do this, you have to bend a lot of laws, do a lot of political assassinations, plenty of murders that Reagan and Meese and Weinberger have covered up. Incidentally, the John Birch Society, according to this author, was torn apart. There was character assassination when it was formed. There was subversion. There was investigation of the John Birch Society. Actually, it went on in the Senate, and it was in California, not Washington. The California Senate Subcommittee on Un-American Activities investigated the John Birch Society at length. Of course, whitewashed them, just as the Warren Commission whitewashed the Kennedy assassination, but they were considered years ago as being dangerous, as fomenting trouble, fomenting the Klan and the Nazis and the Minutemen, who they later worked with and are associated with. And they were investigated, as I say, with the California Senate Subcommittee on Un-American Activities. Now, when the Birch Society got off the ground, the gentleman who really launched it was Robert Gaston, G-A-S-T-O-N, the attorney for Richfield Corporation. I'm getting this again out of the book of John Birch Society by Brian Stevens. Now, Richfield Corporation goes back to the World Commerce Corporation, so that out in California, the attorney for Richfield is getting the Republican Party separated from the other grassroots American Republican Party, the one of Eisenhower, and the usual two-party system that we had in this country. And this is where, as I say, the World Commerce comes in. And he worked with John Rousselot, Western governor of the John Birch Society. The Birch Society from Massachusetts, formed in Indianapolis, was national, and then the tentacles become international, but John Rousselot was the Western division of the John Birch Society, and then Caspar Weinberger was the state chairman of the Republican Party who worked with John Rousselot and Mr. Robert Gaston of Richfield with their national-international tentacles, and Ronald Reagan then began attending the meetings. Of course, the Young Republicans, his anti-communist speeches began in 1951 on the imperialism of the Soviet Union. Ronald Reagan gets into the act. He is down in San Diego with the Birch members. And of course, I've done programs on the fact of Patrick Frawley and the seeds of the John Birch Society being behind the selection of Ronald Reagan for first the governor and then the president of the United States. So Caspar Weinberger and Ronald Reagan were working with these people. Now, a fellow named Mike Newberry, just like it sounds, in 1961, wrote a book, The Fascist Revival, The Inside Story of the John Birch Society. In 1961, we're talking about a long time ago, it seemed, and he was warning about the fascist revival of the John Birch Society, bringing them in as the tentacles to European fascism. But in those days, I don't think any of us even dreamt how bad it was. I'll have to try and reach Brian Stevens, if he's alive, and see if I can get copies of the investigations of the Senate years ago on the Senate Subcommittee on Un-American Activities. John Birch was considered un-American. Now, Edward Hunter, in a man accusing this Mr. Newberry of being a leftist, of writing for the Weekly Worker, revealed a lot of information before the United States Senate Internal Security Committee. Some of this went on to the United States Internal Security from California. And this is what Mr. Hunter said in his report, quoting this from the California report, which he testified in Washington. And this is where we build up to Mr. Meese and Weinberger. I hope I can do it in this 1 hour, but if not, we'll continue it next week. Mr. Hunter is an expert on psychological warfare, testifying, he was testifying about Mr. Newberry trying to make him a leftist, therefore the John Birch Society isn't fascist. A leftist can't have an opinion about the fascist elements of the John Birch Society that he wrote about, the fascist revival. This is what Mr. Hunter described as his background, an expert on psychological warfare. He's chairman of the Anti-Communist Liaison, a committee of correspondence created in March of 1962 by Billy James Hargis, head of the Christian Crusade. Now, this international national network had its seeds in people like Hargis and the John Birch Society. This committee that he was the head of, Mr. Hunter, he described, there are four members of this committee with him, with the Anti-Communist Liaison, four members that served with Hunter. The heads are General Charles Willoughby, that's our old Kurt Wiedenbach from Germany, who was knighted by the Vatican and worked with military intelligence in charge of intelligence with Douglas MacArthur. This member was General Charles Willoughby, who I wrote about in the Rebel magazine as being one of the trouble spots of linking to the assassination of John Kennedy, the Nazi connections to John Kennedy. He says, Willoughby, the U.S. Army retired, Washington's representative of the Christian Crusade, was listed in the same 1963 report of the California Senate Subcommittee as occupying a position of leadership in the John Birch Society. He was also on the board of Young Americans for Freedom with Ronald Reagan and Robert Morris, who brought the Munich people over from Germany to move in with General Walker and be part of the Kennedy assassination. He was cited in the California Senate Subcommittee as having leadership in the John Birch Society. Another member of this group with Mr. Hunter is General Bonner Fellers, U.S. Army, retired national director of the group called For America, another right-wing extremist group, and none other than John Russolot, national public relations director of the John Birch Society. So Mr. Willoughby and Mr. Russolot and Mr. Fellers and Mr. Hunter arranging Caspar Weinberger's political milieu, the climate for him to get into the position where he could eventually declare World War III, and the team that was placed into office by the John Birch Society in 1958, growing out, I know here, because of the connecting groups and names, out of the World Commerce Corporation, then spreads to national, international tentacles. Now, a man like John Sing Lau, but Mr. Wigner, Mr. Stenholz on the board of Western Goals, of course, connect right directly, not only to the Los Angeles Police Department, but material I'm anxious to get to you and share with you that was provided to me of their work with the mercenaries, the plans of infiltration, not only overseas in Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, but into the United States. And, of course, they all have direct links and contacts to those Nazis up in Idaho, Washington, Washington, D.C., Arlington, Virginia, that I also want to get back and share with you. Now, this L.A. Herald had an article January the 13th. We're going to go on to Edwin Meese now, our future or would-be attorney general, and I hope some of you make copies of this tape and send it to members of the Senate Judiciary. Painting the Meese portrait, a powerful, debt-ridden man, and it tells about a man hounded by money woes, January the 13th, 1985. He was so in debt he had no money. But don't mistake Edwin Meese. He just had a coming out party for his daughter at Waldorf Astoria, where he will introduce her to the richest and wealthiest of New York City and hopefully link on to one of those multinationals from the World of Commerce Corporation. This tells about Edwin Meese's problems with his home and the convoluted financing, but that's not the point we're going into now. The article makes you feel sorry for a man who has these debts. One of the things it says that when he got telephone calls from people wanting him to pay his debts, he didn't answer the calls. When they wrote for the payments, he ignored the letters. When the delinquent debts were due, he dodged the bill collectors. I hope if he's the attorney general and you have a closing on a house or a debt due or you can't pay, you have the right not to answer the call. You have the right not to answer the letters. You have the right not to pay the bills because someday you may become the attorney general. He didn't respond to any of those debts in any other way except to give jobs to the people who bailed him out of the money problem and were loaning them money and put them into the administration. Now, last March, I did broadcast on Edwin Meese, March 19th, 1984, tape number 641, if you want to look it up. They promised, according to the Los Angeles Times, March 16th, no cover-up vowed as Meese panel schedules an extensive new inquiry. No cover-up vowed. Well, that is a lie, and I have in my possession, thanks to Johann Carlisle up north, over 300 pages of the Stein Report on Edwin Meese that I'm going to share with you now, and I'm going to zoom in on just one area that is of primary importance. It's of importance to me because of the use of mind control medical experiments that Caspar Weinberger and Ronald Reagan were into in California and Edwin Meese were into. Meese was the ad hoc governor, the legal advisor to the president. The president wanted that school at UCLA to study the causes of violence. And Dr. Earl Bryan, I'll give you the punchlines because we may not have time, and I'll go back to it again next week. Dr. Earl Bryan began pleading for the money to start that school because a schoolmaster up in Northern California had been killed, and he referred to all the violence that had taken place in the murders, and he said, just last week, Dr. Marcus Foster was murdered. We can't condone this. These people are coming out of prisons. They've had records. Well, Joseph Romero came from Vietnam. Russell Little came from Florida, from a Navy family, an Army brat. They were convicted of shooting Dr. Marcus Foster, painted their faces black. Meese, Weinberger, and Reagan were part of the entire SLA. And after my article has been sitting around here for years and people not using it, it is tying directly to the various tentacles of the people wanting to be Attorney General now, President of the United States, the Secretary of Defense, and their intent to give you a limited nuclear war of 100 million dead, more or less, and then see what they go from there. That's what they're aiming for. So these people are for real. Their roots are real. They told you when the guns went off, when John Birch was killed. He worked in the OSS. He worked for Madame Chenault, Claire Chenault, Flying Tigers. Mr. Donovan was their attorney. And, of course, you can get back to William Taub's book with Claire Chenault and the Flying Tigers, The Sources of Power, that I'm not even going to bring up now. But March 26, on broadcast 642, I was talking about the biotech corporation. That's what opened up the whole Meese case. The hearings was the money that Mrs. Meese borrowed from Mr. Thomas to give to Dr. Earl Bryan. Now, Bryan is the one who used the excuse of the SLA, which was a provocateur situation set up by the Nazis and Klan. And in the weeks to come, I'll link it to Mr. Cole, who was in the Bay Area, who took over the Nazi group in Washington, D.C., where Mr. Pierce had written the script coming from Air Force contracts and United Technology. Mr. Haig's organization that he was president of, Alexander Haig. Now, we have Mr. Cole in the Bay Area. What I was writing about was the Nazis and the Klan and Reagan and those people. At the time I wrote the SLA is the CIA. I wrote about the biotech firms, and I didn't write about that. I mentioned those. I wrote about the SLA and these various tentacles, the Los Angeles Police Department, and I'll refresh your memory, and if you don't have it, you can get reprints of my article, The SLA is the CIA. I have those available if you want them. Now, the important thing is that Mies and Reagan and Weinberger, out of the milieu of this group with their tentacles to national and international fascists, going to South American Nazis, Eastern, Northwest, Northeast, and in California, are trying to push a man into the Justice Department who has been a long associate with Dr. Earl Bryan, with nefarious different companies set up, that nothing has been exposed about him or why the Mises had this long relationship with Dr. Bryan. We'll take a one-minute break, and then I'll get back to Edwin Mies and his money for Dr. Bryan in about 60 seconds.